きっと消えない、今日は言えない、元通りにはもうできない、あの頃に君を残したまま。
Listening to Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
And today's episode is our State of the Anime 2021 edition. Yes, it is 2022, but 2022 is still happening, so you basically say it's the state of anime based on 2021 and back. So,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Did we do a 2020?
I think we may have skipped that because pandemic.
Maybe. I don't know. But anyways, we'll get caught up. We'll get to the whole cut. So for those that are not aware of what the whole State of the Anime podcast is, it's basically us looking back on history, looking back on what has transpired that essentially has shaped, showing the trends that is kind of laid out. Yes, some of these topics we have talked about a little bit on different podcasts sprinkled around, but this is an idea to give people as a whole, what we feel about the anime industry and what it's doing, and of course the things that are surrounding anime. Maybe we might talk about VTubers.
Maybe
talk about VTubers.
And this is our, basically our opinion of things that we think are important. So you may see something very interesting and we totally didn't discuss it. It's just
then
what
it means
we
don't care.
Yeah, we don't care about your opinion. No.
If you found something that's not in this list, then it's just we don't care. No, but yeah, honestly, I've already done a video kind of doing the goods and bads and uglies of 2021, but it's not really from perspective of seeing the industry itself changing. And obviously, for those that watch the videos, you don't get to get Chris's perspective on stuff. So that's the added bonus of the podcast.
Yeah.
It's always... See, I don't think I'll ever have you in the videos because then they'll never go to the podcast. I mean, we have to keep the podcast alive with us.
There you go.
But of course, not everybody.
And there is one person in the audience that likes my opinion here and there.
There's too many people. Everybody hates Andrew. But yes, let's
get talking about it. Everybody loves Andrew. Nobody likes me.
Everybody hates Andrew. That's why the channel would grow so much faster with Chris on it. He doesn't live stream anymore. So now suddenly everything kind of starts slowing. We did hit 5,000. There's the update for the anime.
That's because you're the big star. Nobody comes to the videos for me.
It would have grown faster if it was you. But no, we did hit 5,000 subs on YouTube. Definitely appreciate everybody for supporting us there. It's been fantastic. And of course, we just opened up a Discord and our forums blew up. So I definitely welcome everybody to go to our Discord. We'll have links in the description for the video version of this. Well, it's not video version. It's the audio version on YouTube itself in the description itself. We also eventually I'll get links on the main website. I'm trying to rebuild it. And you can, of course, find the link on Twitter at Otaku Spirited, ED at the end of Otaku Spirit. But yeah, somebody else stole it without ED, which I'm still angry about. But anyways.
Did you mention we did that last podcast, but just to throw out again, if you have anything on the forums that you want to save, you need to get on there because it is going to go wherever it goes when things go off the internet.
Yes, off the internet. It's going off the internet.
It's probably archived somewhere.
It probably check out archive.com or gov or whatever it is. But yeah.
Where do they get servers for that stuff?
Where is he storing all this stuff? But yeah, the State of Anime 2021 edition. Definitely got some great stuff to go through here. So again, we'll kind of just throw through bullet points and discuss different things about what has kind of transpired over the last year and how we feel it kind of affects anime itself. I do definitely want to give recognition to the fact that I think last year was pretty darn insane when it came to anime that, I mean, we personally enjoyed. It was a nice boost up. I think every year we'll have, you know, those five or six or seven titles that really do stand out as those amazing titles. And obviously for us personally, Mushoku Tensei was a huge one last year. Obviously Odd Taxi was fantastic. I know a lot of people enjoyed 86, even though technically it's not done yet, but we'll get into the more of that in details later. Obviously Vivi, Wonder Egg Priority, even though again, it had its issues. Really, a fantastic year for anime in general. So I don't know if you agree or disagree. How do you feel things are kind of changing when it comes to good content? Obviously, it's going to be subjective to each person. No, this year had the best titles ever. But I think, like, similar to our discussion we had once before with our podcast, Is Anime Dying? I really do feel like, despite the fact that, you know, I don't hear it as much lately, maybe it's because just my circles itself, I don't hear as often the idea of anime is just getting worse. There's no good titles anymore. Obviously, the golden 90s people seem like they've given up, seemingly. I don't know.
I don't know if it's either that or maybe it's just more of a fading out. You know how we talked about the quote-unquote five-year... Yeah, the five-year...
It's 3 years, Chris. Quite, is it 3 years? Five. Okay,
it's 3 years. We have now technically been through, if you're going by 3 years, three generations of anime viewers or otaku. So
you make it sound old. Three generations of people.
Well, I mean, we've been following anime for nearly 20 some odd years, so we've even farther, I mean, seven generations at that point. But it's funny to think about that. Maybe it's just a matter of those crotchety old fools who can't let the 90s go away are the ones that are actually the ones that are fading out. And it's an interesting thing to think about. Is it more the idea of they're just giving up? But I can't imagine that they are giving or they're because they've stood so firm on that. And so I don't know. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I think over the recent couple months, I think the only thing I've really run into that's that whole mentality of you just don't know what good anime is probably that whole comment about 86 that I ran into at some point where somebody's basically saying, if you like 86, you don't know what good mecha is, go back and watch good mecha. And it's like, oh, so basically nothing can beat your old Gundams and stuff. Not to say that 86 is better than Gundam. It's just they do their own things.
Yeah, honestly. That is an interesting thought I've watched literally the entire Gundam series. I'm going to say maybe I know a mecha or two.
It was like almost 100 mecha shows that I'd watched. So it's like, yeah, I guess I could probably speak on this. Not to say I'm an expert, but
I'm not an expert.
If you're trying to sequence the whole discussion on, you must watch a certain amount. Well, what's your metric? What's your metric?
Now, I'm not in any way, shape, or form calling myself a mecha otaku. I'm or a super robot otaku. I've watched a couple. They're still not my favorite genre, but hey, I've watched a couple.
I've dabbled in it a little bit.
Dabbled in it a little.
But yeah, really solid. Like I said, I think, I mean, especially having, it's always more interesting when you do have, going back to the topic of really good standout titles in the year, it was a very difficult year for us to do our deliberations because there was a lot of stuff that had to fall off. I think both of us in our short list were getting upwards of, you know, 15 to 20 titles that we're like, I don't want to cut anything. And that's always a good sign. Whenever we have to literally say, can we break the 5 rule and just go to 10? Mm-hmm. It's always a good sign. Which I think we every year we'll do that for certain things, but especially for like anime of the year itself, the title itself, it's a good sign. But not only that, but having, I think for anybody, it's especially nice when you have a year where you have that one title that you're literally thinking, I'm going to have to find out how to put this in my of all time list. And that's like really good. I had two shows last year that I was like, I might have to find a spot to put this in my of all time list. And that scares me because I know everything in my of all time list is like, I can't move any of it.
I know that we've been discussing the idea of revamping our all time lists, and it is kind of hard to consider that a lot of the newer shows are actually such great quality and great writing that they really do deserve spots on those lists.
Yeah, and I think the nice thing is that it's that aspect of not really feeling like too much stuff is left unfinished. Now, granted, you're always going to have pretty much 99% of your shows every year is going to be something sourced and it's not going to be finished. But having titles where either you do feel like it's going to get finished, you know it's going to get finished, or it's an original, which, again, is something that we'll get into in a minute, being an increase, it makes it a little more easy to do that. No, but for me, it sucks more so because literally starting the YouTube channel last year, of course, one of my first videos I decided to make was, okay, let me go ahead and update my top of all time list. And so literally right after posting that, I'm getting into, again, Mushoku Tensei, and I'm like, oh, crap, now I gotta go back and fix it. I guess it's more content for me. It's more content. When I can revise my list, it's more content for me to do. So, but yes, Chris needs to, I think we do need to do a podcast specifically on our greatest of all time. And that would be a lot of fun. So I'm going to challenge Chris at this point. I'm going to put it into the podcast. And since I edit the podcast, I won't delete it. Chris would probably delete it. Challenging Chris that he's going to have to make his top, do top 10. 10 would be fine. Top 10 of all time anime. That way we can do a podcast on it.
We'll see.
Because people need an update on you. They get plenty of updates from me if they follow the YouTube channel, which you should be. But they need your perspective. So that'll be fun. Because we need to do that. But anyways, moving on to our next topic. It was, of course, one of the greatest things that happened over here recently, because it was kind of a long period of time that we were just in the unknown for it. But yes, last year, we pretty much had... they were technically coming back into the fray in 2020. But obviously in 2021, we've seen two, technically three, really big releases from Kyoto Animation. And of course, for all those that... I don't expect everybody to know what's going on with all the details in the anime world. But of course, there is a studio called Kyoto Animation. We really do love Kyoto Animation. I think, for me, it's my top favorite studio. Yeah,
Chris, easily.
Both of ours, top studio of all time. A lot of people praise Kyoto Animation because they are a studio that is just highly regarded. There's a lot of positivity coming out of that studio, where you have studios like CloverWorks, which people will cut off the letters of it, so where it's overwork, which I think is extremely clever. You have MAPPA having cases of overworking. You have Attack on Titan having overworking. Kyoto Animation is like this weird thing in the anime world, where it's a studio where there's a lot of positivity around it. Now, there could probably be some bad stuff underneath there that somebody will probably find, but from the outside looking in, it looks like a really solid studio. They have their own training school where people learn how to do their style, basically. They have a lot of positivity coming out of work conditions, pay, and all that kind of stuff. They have a lot of merchandising and stuff to essentially make sure that their studio is always running, people well paid, the conditions are good. And then to have this studio that everybody highly regarded as being a very positive studio in the anime sphere attacked with an arson attack and have lost so many good people that was within their company, it was heartbreaking. Obviously, for the families and everything like that, our hearts go out to them. But the unknown was there. Like, what next? Can we see them come back? And obviously, they were working to get themselves back on their feet. They lost a lot of, you know, materials. Again, they lost a lot of really good people. And to see them finally come back, it was one of those things where you're like, take your time. just take your time. This is a tragedy. And then when they finally come back and you see... We literally in the same year watched Violet Evergarden movie. We watched Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid shorts. We watched Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid S. And it was like, oh, thank God. Welcome back. Like, it was... I got so emotional. Like, this is them back. This is the studio that we love so much. We love their work. And it was just... it was absolutely emotional. And then to have the movie itself be extremely emotional of Violet Evergarden, then have these really sweet moments in Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid, kind of helped. But yeah, just welcome back, Kyoto Animation. It was a great thing for the anime sphere in general. So
yeah, it is one of those things that it there is a connection that it's hard to kind of express in a lot of ways. I mean, we've had a connection with Kyoto Anime, KyoAni, for a long time, and to see them go, I mean, to compound on what Andrew was saying, their attention to detail in a lot of their shows, when we heard of the fire, it was one of those things of, no, where's my studio going to go? I mean, I know it sounds very selfish to say it like that, but it is something that there is a connection that we've had with KyoAni for a long time, that to see them off of the playing board in general, it was almost like, I hope that even if they don't come back, I mean, they're one of those companies that pushes the industry forward. The things that they are doing, I mean, from the cultivation, them putting out they have almost a system for searching for light novels and finding the best one and then offering a contract to produce their product. They go through. I mean, Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid was one of those, wasn't it? Was
mm-hmm.
Violet Evergarden was, where they put out and people. But
no, to correct you, Kobayashi Dragon Maid was a manga already. So just to help, so nobody decides they have to correct that. Violet Evergarden, yes, definitely was one.
And they cultivate it and then make an anime out of it. And that was, that's one of those really cool things that they do. Just like Andrew was saying, with the training of new artists or new animators and stuff like that. That's all stuff that they do. And that, so they are literally pushing the industry forward. So to lose a company like that or a studio like that is detrimental. I mean, the only other one that I would even put in that same, close to that same category is Trigger. I know that they do a lot of stuff like that as well. So it's yeah, to see them come back in full form, Dragon Maid was absolutely fantastic in a lot of the animation department. So yeah, I'm so happy to see them back.
Yeah, and that's just that thing is acknowledging that as a loss. And obviously the Kyoto studio was the one that was attacked, and it's obviously not the entire company, but they had a lot of people that were there and a lot of staff, a lot of people lost their life. And it's okay to acknowledge that it's impactful to you because you have an investment into it. It's similar to people being upset about overworking of animators. It's like, well, there's thousands of jobs in the world, across the world, where people are overworked and underpaid. And it's always like, we always focus on the animators because we have an attachment to their work. So obviously, your thought process when you lose somebody, I mean, that was the big case with Kentaro Miura, who was obviously somebody that we lost in 2021, which is a huge travesty. For those that don't know who he is, he's the mangaka for Berserk. Berserk is a very beloved series, and that was a huge loss to not only, yes, his family, which is devastating, the people around him, which our hearts goes out to, but yes, a loss to a franchise that we absolutely love. You have that connection to something, the story, and you're heartbroken because this was the vehicle in which you connect to this person that you don't know who Kentaro is. You don't know who Miura is. He is this person that's over here. You've never talked to him. I mean, some people probably, you know, interviewed him and stuff, but the manga was your connection, and so you feel a loss because you were connected to this person and their story. And obviously Miura's work Berserk has inspired so many things. I mean, yes, we go back to the whole discussion about, you know, like Cloud from Final Fantasy VII. There's so many franchise. I wouldn't even say Claymore was obviously the female version of Guts. let's just be honest there, but it's inspired so many things, and so it's extremely heartbreaking to know that, again, to give the idea of how we see the world or the anime sphere itself change, I think we're going to see the ripple effects of losing Miura in anime for years to come. And it's a huge, it's heartbreaking itself to really kind of think about. So,
and there's also the aspect of seeing seeing something like that that will just never be finished. And yeah, they may. I mean, I know of some stories that I'm following that I would be one in particular if that old man will ever finish that stupid book, those books. It's one of those things that you can't imagine the idea of a story that is completely in the inside of the mind of one person. And yeah, that somebody might be able to kind of do a satisfying ending to something. Zerk wasn't finished, right?
No, that's the big question mark right now. Is it's like people have said that he has assistants, and obviously big mangakas all have assistants. And
right,
there's a lot of comments that he had, like, you know, assistants and pupils and stuff that he was working with that may have an idea of where he wanted it. But then that's that big question mark. Is this company going to go, should we try? Because obviously it's going to
there will be a backlash, no matter what.
How do you get that word out that this is what he had wrote down? This is the ideas that he had, and we're going to bring them to fruition. Well, you're just wanting to make money off him. Like, well, yes, we have to make mm-hmm. money, but do you want this story? How do you get that word out? And I think, yeah, for a lot of people, it's like, just leave it. Just, they did finally get the last of what was, you know, currently drafted and put into a volume and released it. But it's like, what's beyond that? And I think most people are like, just leave it where it's at. And I'll eventually get to the point where I can, you know, read up to the point that it was at. I would love to get my thoughts on, like, if I feel like it should be left as is. But yeah, it's besides the fact that, yes, we are extremely heartbroken to lose this person that has inspired so many artists out there. But there is a heartbreak also in the idea that you're like not getting the rest of Guts' story is obviously still equally as heartbreaking.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating thing is
if Guts is even still in the manga. I mean, I don't know. I'm not spoiling nothing.
It's one of those things that I would be kind of in a stuck point. I agree that having a conclusion to the story, and at the same time, like we were saying, is having the original creator make it, or the pupils, it doesn't matter how thoroughly. I mean, he could practically have everything skeletoned and drafted and ready to go, and somebody is going to say, well, it changed the minute that he passed, and it was never. Yes. They will always do that, and I would much rather have the story completed and satisfied rather than just. Because, I mean, even George R.R. Martin's going to go through that same thing if he doesn't hurry up and get his story written. I mean, yeah, they supposedly have a whole bunch of people that know his stuff, and they keep him in check and all that stuff, but he's going to have the same problem. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But going back, yes, again, definitely sad to see Miura gone. Definitely happy to see the return of Kyoto Animation, but... Moving on, we have some other topics here. I think we can't finish this entire podcast without talking about a certain trend that I think obviously increased. It definitely increased in 2020, and I think it's reaching, in my opinion, I think it's reaching an oversaturation at this point. But yes, the extreme increase of VTubers. Obviously, we've had in the past, of course, we have idols. Idols are a big thing in Japan. It is, for those who don't know, is basically the idea of, you know, typically girls getting all dressed up, doing song and dance, and just becoming a star in some way, shape, or form. And that kind of transitioned into, oh, hey, we can now motion capture people on computers and have them stream stuff. And that basically became the idols of the internet, is VTubers. And I think for a while there, it was always kind of kept in Japan. We actually had, you know, basically all of the Hololive. It essentially started with Kizuna Ai, and then it moved on to... It started with Hatsune Miku. That was like our first real idea of an anime character that can be motion captured and become a an idol, but yet technically be fake and not necessarily a real... I mean, Hatsumiku is real. But that went to, again, Kizuna Ai doing live performances and stuff, and then that turned into, again, what we have right now is VTubers, Hololive, Nijin Sanji, all those groups that are just blowing up. And I think it's always been kind of kept to, you know, fan subbers and really hardcore fans reading, you know, subtitled stuff or, yeah, learning Japanese just so they can interact with these basically anime waifus that are live streaming. And I think what really blew up was obviously them opening up an English branch for anybody that doesn't speak Japanese. And ever since then, we now have, obviously, people in the West are now doing it. So everybody, you go on to Twitch now and you look through like live stream thumbnails and it's literally like, it feels like half of them are people with some sort of anime waifu cutout or some sort of VTuber personality that they're now doing. Like somebody that I used to watch now and then who was like a very, very low count viewers, but I was like, you know, I'm going to watch this guy. And at some point, yeah, he switched to using a VTuber. It's like, what happened to your cam? And now he's got this, like, husbando butler character that's now him. And it's like, it's getting crazy. It's getting crazy. And I would argue at this point, looking back on 2021, it was really the killing point for me. Like, I literally walked away from it because it's just too much. There's just too many. And I think, I really do honestly, my prediction, I think there's going to be an oversaturation point in 2022. I really don't see this being something that can keep... There's always going to be VTubers, don't get me wrong. But I really do feel like we're at a saturation point where you can create so many people that are supposed to have your attention on a live stream. At what point does it break? At what point do you no longer have enough people to watch all these streams? It's when you see that there's multiple streaming at the same time, it's like, what are we doing? And of course, it's always them just constantly trying to find the next one that's going to be big. Obviously, for the Ian, Garagura was the big one. That's the one that grabbed everybody. And yes, the other ones still get attention, but that was the one that blew up. And yeah, you can say that the same thing with a lot of the Japanese VTubers. But I don't know. Do you agree? Are we at? Do you think we'll have a over? Are you? Do you think we're in a oversaturation? Do you think it's going to break?
I think it already happened. But I'm going from an outsider's perspective. I never really jumped completely head on into it. I'm YouTube is constantly feeding me the dang things. So it's not like I'm not aware of them. I'm very, very aware of VTubers. I want to say that the trend, I seen the cresting of the trend at the point when you came in and you said Netflix has got a VTuber. And I'm like, they did what?
It was Inko or something like that.
Yeah,
Bad. Isn't Inko like poop or something like
and
that?
I'm not bashing any of these VTubers. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. It's one of those things of like when companies come in with their crotchety selves and they think that they understand.
Hello, fellow kids.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the point. I think that you go, okay, I think we've gone a little far on here. And that's the point when you'll start when you start to see it going away is when everybody's like, wait, who? I mean, who was it? Sony was the other one that did it. Sony was trying to do it as well.
That's the funny thing. What is Hololive? It's a company.
Yeah. Well, no, not. They are the trendsetter. I'm talking about some other company trying to. They're watching this and they're going, okay, we need, there's a lot of money being made here. Let's get in on the money. And they're after the money. Hololive is the one that is starting it type thing.
And that's the question mark is I don't necessarily, when you're saying that you see it already, but I think it's more of a thing of, I wonder what my mindset for saturation in 2021 is in the mindset that I seen where it got to its high peak point, and I don't ever see it going any higher. What I mean by it crashing is where it starts coming down. So 2021, I think it's meet its peak. I agree with you that. Because that's where you've seen, yes, all these other VTubers popping up, and it got its saturation point, so it's at the highest peak. And what I see, why I see it crashing in 2022 is I think at some point people are going to get tired of it because there's too much of it, and you can't keep track of all of it. I don't know. I think there's always going to be enough people, But I do agree that I think that, like, Hololive and Niji Sanshi, I think that they're the ones that grabbed it. And I think everything outside of that's just not going to work. With Netflix, I don't think it really matters. And similar to Hime-chan with Crunchyroll, I don't think anybody cares, and I don't think it's hurting them to have it, because they're not focused on it.
Right.
This is Crunchyroll. We stream anime. But, oh, yeah, by the way, we also have a cute VTuber. Watch their videos if you can. Whereas I think with something like the breaking point is really when you have companies that are really trying to bank on it. And I think the prime example here recently was that Sony group.
Right.
Remember we were talking about the Sony VTubers?
I had mentioned that
one
too.
They had this fantastic trailer. And then I think when we did the news bit, we actually went to their YouTube channel and was like, these people aren't even pulling 1,000 views. Like, we get that.
Yeah.
And they're not even getting anything like that. And that's the heartbreak. It's like, that was a sign of oversaturation. That's a sign that people only have so many hours in the day. Mm-hmm. And they're going to watch somebody, and they're not going to watch a new person. It's sad.
And that's what I was trying to express. When I say the cresting, I just mean it's at the top. It can't go anymore.
You only have so many eyeballs.
And that doesn't mean that I'm not quite sure. I think that we're going to start seeing the downtrend soon, but when I'm talking a wave, it's a big old hump. It's not really a not necessarily, we're not on the bottom of the thing at all. I mean, it's going to be around. And like Andrew had said, VTubers are not going away. It's going to be for evermore. You're going to have probably a 50-50 shot when you go and click on somebody's YouTube video. It's either going to be a live stream cam, or it's going to be a VTuber. It's never going away. Because it gives you a... In one respect, it gives you an anonymity, and in another respect, it's some people will find it more aesthetically pleasing than an actual person. I'm no harm done, but it is what it is. So I think that it's already crested, and we will see the after effects from here on out.
Yeah, I think the other kind of disturbing aspect that kind of comes over the last year was definitely around the idea of just kind of running into the controversy surrounding it. Obviously, here recently, we had the whole controversy with Ruscha, and I think that is kind of one of those unhealthy aspects of the VTuber aspect, and I think that's probably something that will cause that downward spiral. And I think that's really my probably 90% of my reason why I left the just watching VTubers in general is just the fandom itself is just not very, it's not very fun. I grant most live streams, especially if it's got any more than like maybe 100 viewers, I'm going to turn off the chat, because there's no point in me watching it move that fast. I can't turn off the chat for my own live streams, and I would never do that, but for those ones, never really check out the chat. And I think there's a lot to be said about how, I don't know, I want to say unwelcoming, but how unsatisfying it is to really see a lot of the community and how it manipulates the VTubers themselves.
So. I was actually going to say that as well. As I think that the pushing them in, I do like.
I liked
it
every one of the Hololive Ian VTubers when they first started. Kali, I was but it wasn't within a week or two that I started seeing they're just acting what the chat wants them to do.
Exactly.
You when they first started. Every one of these Hololives, when they kind of start, they'll have a persona they go with. And then within no time at all, within weeks, they all were just basically trying to ship each other and getting, you know, they were breaking out of character. They were becoming what the chat wanted them to do. They were becoming what these people that spam the chat wanted them to do. The ones that super chatted them, they're doing what they said they want to do. And they were no longer their own self. So it's like, well, what's the point? You do because... It's no longer fun to me. And that was, again, like 90% of the reason why I kind of walked away. So, which comes with the idea of being a VTuber. It's you're becoming what your community wants you to become to satisfy them. So I'm not blaming them, but yeah, it's weird. Anyways, that's enough VTuber. That's enough VTuber talks. You can't not talk about it. It's sadly, it's the future. And it is something that I think is going to continue to be. And it's probably going to be something that's going to evolve. honestly. As they get better technology, it's probably going to just completely change. There'll probably come a time where you're watching literally a webcam and it's just an anime character sitting in a chair, a real chair. It's going to be, I don't doubt that eventually, but yeah, I mean, they already have pretty much full body mocap that they do events with. So
can you imagine?
It's a matter of time just putting them into an environment.
Can you imagine, and I can see that being very, you're going to have backgrounds and stuff like that. You're going to have literally, maybe even a 3D at some point, the way that they're trying to push this freaking meta thing so hard. We're going to end up with a basically almost a Genshin Impact scene. That I think is going to be something similar to that.
Well, and like I said, they do full room environments with the mocap, with the VTubers. It's just, it's always kind of like, just not a very, it's not very, they can't interact with things in the environment, obviously, because it's just an environment and they're capturing the body itself. So
I think that Genshin will probably be the Breath of the Wild / Genshin, that will be the most aesthetically pleasing, because that one seems to fit the best. As far as a 3D environment, the 3D companies need to get on that. The anime studios need to get on that 3D soon.
Yeah, like a cel-shaded look to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, moving on. Obviously, we cannot go entire state of anime without talking about the state of the streaming services. Obviously, one of the biggest hot-button topic that came out last year was Sony. Technically, last year, it was the confirmation that Sony successfully has acquired Crunchyroll. And again, obviously, they previously have bought Funimation, and obviously they are already technically a part of Aniplex because Sony owns Aniplex in Japan, same case in the West. It was one of those things where it was, yes, announced in August of the previous year, 2020, but it was a confirmation that everything went through and it's official within the year. And I think that was a huge, obvious changing point in the anime sphere. Again, we're technically still waiting for the actual effects to come through, if any effects. Some would argue that you're already seeing effects if you want to get into the weeds with it.
I was going to say, I already see the effects, so.
If you want to get into the weeds of it, nothing official, okay? Nothing officially press released. This has changed. We can make our arguments about things not being where they should be, and that's a sign. But, that's huge. Thoughts?
The downside of this is that we've beat this to death.
Right.
I'm still hopefully optimistic on it. Unfortunately, we've already seen some signs of things that are coming through. I definitely have seen the libraries merging. That's been
a nice thing.
That is nice.
They're still kind of keeping a two or three on each side just to keep that. Just keep that double dip going on. But the nice thing about that is it at least gives most people that option of like, well, do I really like those three titles that's on this one or on that one? And then they can kind of choose. Yeah, it's not as much as like before where it was like 20 shows over here and 20 shows over here. It's literally, you know, yeah, like I said, 16 on both of them. And then there's, you know, there's two over here and two over here. So you can decide. It's not what we're hoping for eventually, which I argue will never happen, and the idea that it's just suddenly, yeah, like for instance VRV, even though that got shut down, here's this new, you know, Sony anime and all of it's on that and you only have one sub, because it's literally them throwing away money. I just don't ever see them ever merging
I do think that they're eventually just to cut down the paperwork. But when it at some point, really,
if
what
that,
I think
if that happens, they'll be Netflix cost. It's going to be probably a 16-month sub.
The way I see it pretty much playing out is it's pretty much going to be just two faces of the same coin. It's how do you want your anime catered to you? Do you want it to be subbed or do you want it to be dubbed? And that's literally going to be what it is. It's not outside of that.
I don't know. Because I think we were talking about that when we first started this whole discussion about the buyout. And one of our suggestions was what's going to turn into is that if you like dubs, you're going to go to Funimation.com and it's going to have all the titles, but they're going to be in dub. But if you go to Crunchyroll, it's going to be sub. I don't think that'll ever happen just because they don't have the capability of rolling out all the shows on a weekly basis. And I think that's going to cut down a lot of the subs to Funimation. Now, granted, I do know there's a lot of people that all they do is watch dubs and it'll work for them no matter what. But I think the anime sphere as a whole, that, you know, the millions of subs that, you know, Crunchyroll talks about, I don't think would ever sub to Funimation at that point.
I don't know. I don't.
They were doing good for a while there. Funimation was doing really good. I mean, that was one season where there was, it seemed like there was like 10 or 15 shows that were all getting simuldubs. And then, yeah, I think it's probably the pandemic that really kind of hit it. But I think it kind of dropped away before then. Just suddenly out of nowhere, I guess they felt like it wasn't working out. It was too much work, probably wearing the hell out of their voice actors and voice actresses, having to come there on a weekly basis and turning, or basically on a daily basis, if you make, because they were essentially trying to turn out the dub like right after the subtitle version came out because they were getting the script beforehand. Yeah. And it seemed like, yeah, at some point it stopped. And I would see that probably being because they had literally one show a day. They had to come in there and read a whole bunch of lines and then come back the next day and read a whole bunch of lines really quickly just to get it turned through.
Well, and they may just return to the way they were doing it before. Simuldub was a good idea. It mm-hmm. really was. But I agree. That's massive. And I think we even talked about that when they first announced it. We were discussing the idea of this is in huge. This is massive. If they can actually pull this off, they can actually be the Crunchyroll killer if they can pull this off. But that was at the time. Now them merging together changes a lot of things, but when it comes down to it, Simuldub was probably one of the biggest gambles that Funimation could have done at the time. And if they had won that bet, it would have, like I said, it would have killed Crunchyroll because they would have had such a lock on the industry as a whole. They would have, because there is a massive, and I hate to say it this way, because in the dub versus sub argument, there is one thing that dubs will always have: an untapped market, period. There is an entire market of people who are okay with anime. They're not as hardcore as a sub people, if for a lack of a better term, but they do like anime that they don't get really served. You want to know how I know? Toonami, period.
Well, that's what I was going to get into, is this idea of what would have probably made that whole situation better is not just do the simul pub, but also just, hey, Toonami, here's a whole bunch of shows we're doing. Could you imagine Toonami saying, hey, get your latest anime all airing this week as it releases in Japan, basically? No, it's not releasing on the day of and within the hour of the show in Japan, but at least each week you can go to this one channel and watch all the shows that were aired in Japan that week, all dubbed.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge. I mean, I couldn't imagine hearing that, a long time ago. You can get every show that was currently airing in Japan, boom, one night, watch it all, and it's all dubbed. That's crazy.
See, what I don't think a lot of people realize is you have an entire, a lot of content that is just sitting there waiting to be translated to to a Western audience. And how do I explain this? One of the reasons why Netflix got to the point it is curating stuff that's already pretty much been made. And they just, all they did was found a way to deliver it. Amazon tried to. That's why Crunchyroll technically succeeded, is the content's already there. All you have to do is slap subtitles onto it and deliver it to the customer. That's all that these people are doing. That's why I've complained, why I've made such a big deal about
it. Code it and well, host yeah. it and everything. There's more.
I'm not trying to downplay it completely. I'm trying to get to an idea of what it is that these companies are missing out on. See, if Cartoon Network decides to get into making cartoons all together, they have to create a content, they have to buy the contract a creator, they have to pay for all of the production. What I'm saying is all that product is already made, and all they have to do is deliver it to the customer. And that's, yeah, there is things involved in all that, but you have a product that already just has to be translated just a little bit.
I wonder if Toonami's ever had subtitled anime.
I don't think so.
Because I think Fina, when it was airing, was also dubbed. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've watched it, so I don't know. Somebody could probably tell us.
It's one of those things that is really kind of cool when you stop and think about a lot of that stuff, is what it is that these companies are actually doing when they do that, and not downplaying it, because there is a lot of backdoor behind the scenes stuff that is happening, the royalties and all that stuff. So I'm not downplaying all the contracts and stuff like that. It's just that I'm saying that there is an entire untapped market that is available if one of these companies actually pulls it off.
I guess it makes sense that it was dubbed, because it was technically outside of, like, they didn't get it in Japan until the following season. Like, it was literally something that Crunchyroll did, and that's why it started like in the middle of the season and it ran into the next season, was because it technically wasn't broadcast in Japan. It was literally here first. It was here on Toonami. It was here on Crunchyroll. And then the following season, it went to Japan. So that makes sense. But yeah. Interesting stuff. Obviously, other things that happened regarding streaming services was that Netflix had stepped up to try to handle providing their titles a little bit quicker. Many, including myself, would argue it was a valiant attempt, but still extremely delayed, and that's unfortunate. I mean, some of the shows were three weeks delayed, and that kind of sucks, because that's still, why bother if you're not going to be able to pull it off? And again, the argument goes against the whole, there's got to be something contractual behind it, because I don't understand. Again, we made the argument about Violet Evergarden having English subtitles when it was in Japan, and yet it wasn't available elsewhere. What's so hard here? But at least they're trying, I guess. I don't know. Again, I go back to this being kind of more fine with the idea of, if it's not TV broadcast, just dump it all. And if it's TV broadcast, please, weekly. Please, when it actually releases. If a small company like Crunchyroll can figure it out, I'm sure a big corporation like Netflix can figure it out. I mean, you're getting showed up by a smaller company. Well, I would argue it's probably not a smaller company anymore. Especially not that Crunchyroll's Sony. So
that's all right. The Netflix anime department's listening to us and going, Andrew, I'm telling you, it's not as easy as you think.
Eventually they'll
figure out. He's in some closet somewhere. I'm trying.
They'll figure out somehow that, by the way, you can put more than, we should probably update our subtitle system so you can put more than just one line of text on the screen at once.
Oh. You just remind me. I hate you, Roberts. Roberts, fix the Roku app. Please. I'm begging you. Fix it.
Damn it, Roberts' mug is coming soon, by the way. It's so sad. And again, like, of course, we're waiting weekly to tell, you know, our listeners what we're working on. But I've already kind of mentioned to, you know, Discord and other places, like, here's this damn it Roberts mug, and it's coming. And I'm like, some of you might not know what that is because you're coming from the YouTube channel or something like that. But the podcast listeners know what a damn it Roberts mug would be. But yeah, that's I'm tempted on making it work out no matter, like, a left hand and a right mug, a right hand mug and a left hand mug. That way, damn it Roberts is always pointing outwards.
We already have a dual wielder in our Discord.
Yes, they're talking about buying both of them. So just. I'm not sure you gotta have the white mouth in order to pull that off, but sure, I guess. Do you?
Are you sure it's not a alternating?
It could be. It's less funny though. But anyways, yeah, that's a thing. And of course, our last bit of big change. Well, no, there's two more, because since I made this outline, something else significant happened. Of course, High Dive, Sentai Filmworks was bought out by AMC. And so that's obviously going to, that one's a very early one. We really have zero clue what that might end up changing. Zero signs on what their actual game plan is there. And since they're technically, yes, they're both, AMC is television. The question mark is there. Is it AMC want anime to put on AMC's channels? Do they want to put AMC stuff onto High Dive's platform? We don't know. It is a very much so. Is it them trying to get Sony to buy them? Is it them trying to expand their catalog? It's a big question mark. Obviously, it seems like Sentai is still doing Sentai. And again, like we always say, whenever there's a buyout, don't expect changes for at least a year, because they always have to, one, make sure the check cashes, and two, figure out how the companies work and then implement changes. So what those changes are is a big question mark. And obviously, Sentai is still going forward. We have your boy Kong Ming is going to be on High Dive next season, so they're still licensing stuff. Obviously, those licenses were probably finalized last year. They're just finally announcing it, but it'll be interesting. I really was always rooting for Sentai as a company that's standing against all the big companies. Granted, AMC is not super huge. It's bigger. But I do hope that works out well for them, because I've always kind of been on Sentai's side. They've always kind of had a lot of titles that nobody else touched. And then a question mark comes there. Is AMC being a part of them going to change that whole aspect? Because, yeah, we had things like Redo of Healer was on Sentai. A lot of titles weren't even censored on High Dive. Will they start getting censored now that they're part of a bigger company? We don't know it yet. So
yeah, that's one of those things that when we had mentioned it, it was, I hope I can. We said the same thing with Crunchyroll. Mm-hmm. We hope. I hope that it turns out good. But make no mistake. Yeah, when they came out and said nothing's going to change. Yeah, nothing's going to change at first, because they don't want to scare you off. It really is what it comes down to. When things start changing, it'll be subtle at first, and then it'll be more overt, and then eventually you're sitting here watching Redo of Hiller in the movie theater, because they need to get more money in those theaters.
Yeah, of course, the other one that happened was Disney Plus pretty much announced that they're getting into the anime sphere they had anime on their platform and they were licensing. They paid for the whole Star Wars thing. But yes, this was Disney Plus saying basically, oh, by the way, that whole seasonal anime thing, we're going to be doing that now. And that was kind of a big shift. Of course, they announced that they were picking up licenses for Summertime Rendering, Black Rock Shooter, Tatami, Time Machine Blues, which are all basically titles that will be coming out in the spring of 2022. So they were pre-announcing it, that they were getting into it. How they'll handle weekly releases is going to be the question mark. Are they going to do like, you know, Netflix and hold their cards until the end of the season? Of course, the announcement was in Japan. Disney Plus was saying, hey, Japan, we're going to start streaming anime. And those were the titles they picked up. So and they said that they were going to have it worldwide as well. But again, the question mark is it weekly in Japan and the rest wait until the end of the season like Netflix did, or are they going to do weekly? That's going to be the big question mark for a lot of that stuff. And of course, that does change a lot of things. Our big fear here in the West is that Disney is a family company and they don't touch naughty stuff. The thing that obviously a lot of people point out is that Disney Plus in other regions has some pretty crazy stuff, violent stuff, yeah, nudity and stuff like that. I think some place even said that Disney Plus has Walking Dead in it. And it's like, okay, so that's cool, but here over in North America, Disney Plus is like, that's just like Sony. Like over here, PlayStation, it's kept in under wraps, but other places it was different. Each different region has its own standards, and Disney itself is just very family in America. So it'll be interesting, because I've heard there's violent stuff and different things in Summertime Rendering, so that'll be probably the big question mark there. But again, we'll have to wait and see. But that definitely does change a lot of things. I'll be very curious to see how it handles in spring. I don't know that I want to get another subscription. I really don't. Because, yeah, that means that technically next season it's going to be you're going to have a Funimation, Crunchyroll,
High Dive,
Netflix, and High Dive, and Disney Plus. So five?
So nothing's changed.
Crunchyroll, Funimation, all these Disney, Netflix. Five, right?
I'm kind of pretty right. much, yeah.
I'm not saying things twice.
So all these major shifts in the industry and nothing's changed.
Yeah. It kind of feels like back when Amazon was doing Amazon Prime, because back then I think we were at five that time too. And then we had like things like Daisuke and stuff that were popping up and it was like, crap, way too many. So it's going to be rough if you want to watch all the shows. It's going to be very rough, including myself. But them's the break. So yeah, Netflix alone is way too much. I don't know what the sub is for Disney right now. I think it's 10, maybe 15. So that's your 50 bucks plus easily. So rough. Anyways, moving on. This is a funny one. AnimeTube Kickstarter happened. I think in this particular topic, it's really just kind of the growing trend. I think crowdfunding scams. Not just crowdfunding scam, as they've always been around. Crowdfunding scam is a huge button thing right now. But specifically, I feel like around anime itself. And I think AnimeTube was a really big, I think, eye-opening experience for a lot of people. And it was something that I passionately went out of my way to make sure that people were informed on, because I felt like I had a duty as somebody who has some knowledge in the anime industry. And the people that I watch on a regular basis that are very much so in talks with Japanese studios to kind of be an echo chamber for them to really get people informed on this stuff. Because I think right now, as I mentioned previously, I get emails on a regular basis for different crowdfunding stuff for anime. Another one that I got was specifically saying, make your own anime. How would it be cool if you can donate money to this whole project where we're going to raise money and we're going to get with the studios and we're going to make an anime, and everybody that donates can vote on it, which I'm like, that itself sounds really stupid. I don't want my anime to be a mishmash of, you know, different ideas based on different polls. And then literally, here's a bunch of random extras popping up out of nowhere because, oh, by the way, they gave $1,000. So we got to make sure that that person pops up on the screen and their microphone sucks, so they sound weird. None of it sounds good. But the whole point in this whole discussion is just around, be careful. Like, this is a growing trend right now, is scamming people with crowdfunding. Crowdfunding is very popular to do. It definitely takes passionate people that want something to be a reality. And there's a lot of people that love to take advantage of that. And I think, again, AnimeTube, it could have had good intentions, but all signs led to either their scamming, they were basically crooks, or extremely misinformed, because they said a lot of things that would never be physically possible. It would never be financially possible. They were talking about basically, anime doesn't cost as much as all these services claim. We're going to get all of them. We're gonna make a platform where you can watch all the shows. And literally all the industry was going, the hell are you talking about? And some of them were going, why do you list my show? I bought that show. Why is it in your list? I paid money for that, and you just can't just have it. And again, a big argument there was like, they were claiming, you know, thousands upon thousands of shows. And I'm like, okay, just say that each show costs like pennies. It's still a lot of money. It was ridiculous. So I always say, like, get a second opinion. If you see something like a crowdfunding thing, look into the owners. I think that's the easiest thing to really tell. And this was this recent example that I got with this email saying that they wanted to create anime. The first thing I asked them in the email, who's backing you? Who owns the company? Give me names. They would not give me actual names. Because if you have a company, a group that is taking a lot of money, they have to have a name behind it. And if you can't just tell me who is the name behind it, that tells me I don't know where the money is going and that person can walk away. You should at least have a face in front of everybody. That's like Anime Ego. Guy has his face right out there. You know who this person is, and you know you can hold them responsible. It's the same way with your Skip Beat Kickstarter. You knew the person. You knew their face, and you could say, this is the person that says, you can trust me with your money. I will make this happen. If you can't see a face, That's the quickest way for you to know that you should walk away from a crowdfunding, because then you know you have somebody to be accountable for if you do see their face. Thoughts?
I had a whole bunch of thoughts and I lost them all.
As Andrew was rambling on, Chris lost all of his thoughts. I mean, do you agree on the idea that what is your opinion on crowdfunding and how you should trust it?
Well, I've always been kind of gray area when it comes to Kickstarter and the crowdfundings in general. I like the idea of the decentralized. I don't like the idea of the bigger companies taking advantage of it. And I don't.
Funimation.
Yeah. And I don't like how easy it is to manipulate. When we discussed this, I kind of threw it out there as a kind of an interesting flipping the way you think about what is going on here. Like Andrew had mentioned, this is somebody taking advantage of people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, flip that on its head. What is it that these people are taking advantage of? A frustration. That frustration is we are not being served anime the way we want it to be served to us. And this is actually a really big, honestly, if you take into consideration what this is it's a slap in the face of these companies that we keep mentioning. You guys, these companies need to listen to their customer base, and they're not listening to their customer base. And this is, yeah, you can laugh it off all you want, but eventually these voices will become the vast majority of your customer base. That's the way I look at it. Is yeah, I do see the scam, and it's frustrating that there is a possibility that customers can be scammed like this. But I also see it from a different thing. I see the voice of the customers that are frustrated, and I think that is something that needs to be addressed more than the scam. The scam is a bunch of crooks that probably will never get caught. I'm more frustrated that these customers are not being served what they want to be served.
Well, that's the crazy thing, because to your point, with the idea of AnimeTube, it was specifically, again, going on the idea that it was a scam. If it was a scam, it was really preying on, and you could see this, they were preying on what people wanted. What did everybody want? A website that had everything on it. Why can't this be a thing? Why do I have to have subs with five companies just to watch my anime? And they were literally coming out and saying, they're doing it wrong. We'll do it right. We'll give you everything. Even shows that literally you can't get the license for them anymore because it's lost in license hell. I mean, I think they probably even listed Monster on there. These are things that you literally legally cannot get a hold of because there's too much mud around it. But people want it. And the piracy sites give it. And then suddenly this company comes out and says, they're just lying to you. We can do it. Everybody was on board. Well, not everybody. A lot of people were on board because that was the fantasy. That was what they wanted. We don't want to have to deal with all this crap about all these five companies that we don't even know if we can trust them or not. This was the one place. This is the place that was all going to go to. And it fed on that to make money. I've watched videos that talk about, I think one of the other bigger scams that goes on right now with crowdfunding is MMOs. People promising video games.
Yeah.
And these ideas of nostalgia that they're preying on that. They're preying on nostalgia for MMOs that were of the old days. And they get the money. They'll throw out a video that says, here's the beta. Here's what it looks like. And then they disappear with the money. And that's a growing trend right now, is scamming people that are wanting something, this hope. And there's no real guarantee on it. There's nothing on the site says you're going to get this. It's just this blank promise that you're going to get something. And like I said, you have to be careful about it.
And it is frustrating because you're speaking exactly to what I'm saying is, yeah, you can pass it off as just it's fantasy. You'll never get what you're asking for. But there's a market there, just like we were talking about earlier. There's this vocal loud minority of people who think that any anime character that pops up on the screen immediately it's CP. Automatically, that's what it is. But when it comes down to it, not necessarily everybody is like that. There's a lot of people who are actually okay with Naruto. That's what they think of when they think of anime. They think, oh, Naruto, I watched that when I was younger. Going more into my generation, people that'll probably go, yeah, I love Sailor Moon. I mean, or Dragon Ball Z. So there's a lot of people who are okay with anime. They don't necessarily follow it, but they like it. I mean, and that's a thing that these companies need to take into consideration, that your fantasy is not necessarily mean it's unattainable. That's untapped potential right there. I mentioned before, I wish I had the financial backing to take over the Phantom. I know exactly what can fix this crap.
I want to take over the Phantom.
I want to. It's one of those frustrating things.
I had a mental image of Chris standing on the wall. Has a cape on and big red spiky glasses.
It's one of those frustrating things of, I can see these problems. I can see what it is that we could do. The problem is that I'm not these big companies. I can't fix it all because I have none of these powers. But I can see the problems. I can see the problems all day. But yeah, it's frustrating.
Anyways. Yeah, I think that's something that's always going to be around. There's always going to be problems, and it's just kind of shifting around it. And like we said before, this idea of, you know, if it doesn't go quite in the right direction, you can always go back to the old early 2000s. Just get that torrent program fired back up. Hopefully it still works. There might be some updates needed for it. It's probably going to happen for a certain OVA of Mushoku Tensei. Just saying. I don't know how they're going to stream that. But anyways, let's get back into some cool things that happened. Obviously, we had the conclusion of Evangelion. That finally concluded, or so we think. Probably going to be some spinoffs later. We'll have to wait and see. I don't think that franchise is ever dying because money. It makes money. But Attack on Titan was supposed to end last year. But the final apparently has multiple parts. We'll see if it goes to three. I think unless I'm forgetting something significant, I think two parts probably going to be the finale. I don't know. But yeah, Log Horizon Return, that was exciting. And of course, we finally have the conclusion of Fruits Basket, the real full complete adaptation, which I think is actually really fantastic for fans and for myself. I really enjoyed finally getting that conclusion. Thoughts on any of those? Evangelion is probably the hugest one. I go back to the anime awards. I was the one I was looking at the most for categories was I wanted to see. And granted, it's part judges and part fans, but I wanted to see which was going to be bigger, the old fandom or the new fandom. It was Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0 Deus Machina / XXX versus Demon Slayer movie, and Demon Slayer won because I mentioned on my live stream, it's like, well, if you imagine it, most people that were really big on Evangelion, that grew up with Evangelion, probably the older ones, they probably have fallen out of anime and they've heard, oh crap, there's a new movie. I don't watch anime anymore, but I'm going to watch Evangelion. Those are the people that aren't going to be watching the anime awards. Those are not going to be the ones that are going out there to vote on a daily basis on the website. The Demon Slayer fans, yes, they're going to be there. They're going to make sure they click on that button every single day. They're watching the clock for it to strike midnight so they can click that vote button again, because they want to make sure that their boy Tanjiro gets on that list.
Anime awards, I don't even... That's just a box of worms that I'm not sure we want to dig into.
I'm just talking about Evangelion.
The Evangelion versus Demon Slayer, I think I agree. I was getting ready to point that out as well as...
There's so much more significance in the world of anime of Evangelion ending. Let's be perfectly honest. You can't deny that. Whether you think one's a better film than the other, I don't care. That's perfectly fine. I can see people saying, I didn't like Evangelion, but I really love Demon Slayer. That's just great. All the power to you. It's just a fun thought.
It is. And I don't I think that the people who would care about Evangelion are the type of people that look at general anime and they're like, yeah, whatever, but I don't really much care about voting in a thing, like you were saying. I think that now, on the same token, you're also right about the people who are nuts about Demon Slayer are probably the ones who are very passionate about Demon Slayer. And they don't really much care. Well, that's shonens in general. I mean, yeah. we see that in most every new shonen that is going, they're absolutely avid about it.
Yeah, there's obviously a group of people that every season they watch one show, and it's typically going to be the big shonen show. Because it's just it's got that fun build up. They don't want to care about drama and stuff. In some cases they probably want to focus on shows that they know will continue to go on.
How long did we hear about Clover and how we needed to watch Clover or Black Clover? Excuse me, and how we needed to watch Black Clover and the people.
Side tangent. I seen a post the other day. It was like people who hated Asta from Black Clover and yet they're okay with Zenitsu from Demon Slayer, and I'm like, well, technically I had like a good, what, 4 episodes to get into Demon Slayer before that guy showed up and annoyed me. Whereas from episode 1 you had Asta, so it was a little harder to get past, but I do see your point.
And that's one of those things that I've always planned on going back to it, because there is characters that I did like in there, and but it was one of those that just kind of fell off to the side, the wayside. Mostly because I didn't have somebody to enjoy it with. You didn't think of that.
Nobody to laugh about Asta with.
Yeah. it's funny because you do notice that that's a thing that I have noticed before, is whatever the big shonen is, that's what everybody is saying. Well, you need to watch it because it's the greatest show ever, because that's where all the passion is. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we've mentioned several times there's a lot of things.
I think it's passion and saturation, because I think anybody that watches the other shows are passionate about them. I think it's just a passion plus saturation.
Yeah.
You have more people that are more likely to say, you need to watch this. All right. Netflix tried a live action Cowboy Bebop. Do you want to talk about this? I think this is another one we've talked to death. But yes, they tried to do a live action of Cowboy Bebop. I think it was fine for a Western show. I think it was a terrible Cowboy Bebop adaptation. I think most people pretty much echo that. It's fine itself, but it's not Cowboy Bebop. Yeah. Anyways, and they're going to do One Piece now. So there you go. That trend is still keeping with Netflix. Obviously, they haven't learned their lessons, so they're going to keep doing that. Whatever happened, have you seen anybody whisper about the Sword Art Online live action? I haven't heard about that.
Not the live action, but I did hear that their MMO is coming soon, I think, is what I seen somebody pointed out.
We'll see. The last thing I want to do is play a Sword Art Online MMO. Hopefully it doesn't require goggles and zaps your brain, but sure. That's like the idea. Let's see. That would be like them selling an actual Death Note. And so it's like you buy it knowing that, hey, it could possibly kill somebody or even yourself. And then it's like, it's the same thing with Sword Art Online. It's like, oh, so this is based off that game where people got trapped in it and their brains zapped. Yay!
the Sword Art Online is one of those weird things of, I like the concept of their game. Every time they've tried to recreate it, it's never worked. And I would be, but these are all the single players. Playing it on an MMO, I don't think would fix anything. Yeah. Unless it's an actual good, I like.
Nothing about the world of Sword Art Online do I want to explore. It's the characters. It's always been the characters. So, yeah, maybe technically with an MMO, you could have it be like a Final Fantasy 14 experience where the main storyline itself is like you interacting with all the big characters of the show. And then outside of that is you just your own faceless character running around beating up on mobs and grinding. I can see that working. The question mark is, is it like hardcore where like you die and your character is deleted.
That would be
like the original. Just like the original.
But unfortunately, I mean, they would have to.
People do hardcore things in MMOs all the time. Or if your character dies, you start over.
They would have to really beef up the character a little bit, though. I don't know. It'd be interesting. But either way, I love the idea of the 100 floor MMO. I think it's a really, really cool idea. And then just make the last boss almost unbeatable. Yeah. I think it would be a really cool idea. Unfortunately, none of the quote unquote adaptations have worked, and all of them are trying to do what you were saying of making a dating sim-esque type game. They're fun for a little while. You can play them and you go, oh yeah, I get all the characters for a little while. But when it comes down to it, I don't think I've ever beaten any of them. Mostly the because I get bored.
Tiresome. Yeah, the grind itself and the gameplay itself gets kind of exhausting.
The one that I got the farthest in was the Gungale one.
Mm.
That one was actually very interesting gameplay. I did kind of really like the way that gameplay was, but eventually it did get boring.
So moving on our next subject.
But that's not Netflix. You're right.
So moving on our next subject, we have the failures of adaptation. This is, I think, the biggest scary thing about anime in general as the industry. Is typically, I think somebody at some point had asked on Twitter to me and somebody else, what do you think this is a... they were asking if it was something new. And he was like, no, this is nothing new. This is something that happens every year. The question was specifically around 86, where you had it's this delay. But I think the failures in this particular year was very, very scary and trend-wise. We had, specifically talking about delays themselves, we had Wonder Egg Priority, we had World's End Harem, and we had 86. 86, its last two episodes were delayed until literally the beginning of spring of 2022. We had Wonder Egg Priority had its last episode delayed until another season following that. Typically, the delays are really around that because they want to get into an end bracket of a time slot on television broadcast. So if they don't meet their end, well, the next show has the next time slot. You can't just keep delaying into the next time slot. So they have to wait until the next time slot ends at the end of that season, and then they'll drop them those episodes at the end of there. And the delays are, again, really caused by having a lot of issues with scheduling, animation, and sometimes with, Wonder Egg Priority, they were claiming it was because... Well, each one of these have different reasons. Wonder Egg, some people were saying that some of the directors and stuff were too ambitious. And so they were wanting grandiose animations, and they just couldn't do it. There was too many cuts, too many frames of animation, whatever. And so it was too difficult. And so they had to delay it. World's End Harem, it was a problem with quality right off the bat. Some would argue something else. And then 86 was, probably another case of just being too ambitious and having too many delays, too many other broadcasts that came up at the same time that was in conflict with until eventually it had to be delayed completely. So, yeah, it was a rough year for that in that particular. And that kind of continues on into the failure of adaptations, I would argue, with some of these cases. Obviously, we had Promised Neverland's second season completely skipped one of the biggest arcs of the original manga, which upset people. I would argue it from a vantage point of somebody that has not read the source material, it felt a little bit jarring, but I think overall it was just kind of a disappointing season in general because it didn't have the flavor of the first season. I'm Standing on a Million Lives, they did an original story with their second arc. They completely didn't do what the manga went into, which, for those that don't know, for those that watched I'm Standing on a Million Lives, at some point, every time they get brought to this other world, they're given a choice between quests. And in the manga, they chose one of those selections, whereas in the anime, they chose the other one. So they had no source material to work with because the anime chose a different choice there. And I would argue I felt that. I didn't know until afterwards, but I felt it at the time. This doesn't feel like this show. The writing feels different. It feels off. And that would be the explanation why. Obviously, we had the horrific adaptation of So I'm a Spider, So What? That was only held together by Aoyuki and voicing Kumiko, because that was animation-wise a crap fest. Way the House Husband and its slideshow animation. And then finally, Yuki is a Hero, which I think was a huge disappointment for me because, one, they showed the movie again for the third time. Two, they cut a whole bunch of content out of the backstories, basically year zero. It's just, it's disappointing more in the idea when you have certain shows that have such high praise around it. Promised Neverland was a huge success with its first season. Tokyo Revengers, everybody was looking forward to that, and they censored the crap out of that. Again, Yuki is a Hero for me personally. Maybe it's dropped off for a lot of people. Again, getting into 86 and World's 188 Priority. Just having these... typically, when you have delays and issues in animations, it's always like these sideshows that, like, we're the only ones watching. It's like these goofy, yeah, probably shows that people go, oh, it's another magic school. Oh, or it's another etchy comedy. Oh, it's another isekai. It typically happens with those, the ones that are out of the viewpoint of people. But these were like really big titles in the year. And it really did kind of make you wonder if something was happening. Yes, you can probably argue it's the pandemic, but it was stuff that I think wasn't really showing signs of it being an issue about, not always being an issue about animation and production, but more about writing and choices that the directors and the studios were making. Case in point, Tokyo Revengers, looking at the side of a shrine instead of seeing what's happening on the screen because you're afraid of a manji symbol, which is not the other symbol that you think it is. It's really telling. There was a lot of goof ups last year. Let's just say that. And maybe it's just me trying to keep me covering it more. So me keeping an eye on it more and thus being able to list it easier. But it felt rough. It really did feel like a rough year for a lot of titles, in my opinion.
No, I pretty much only watched one of those shows.
I just realized that. Yes. So My Spider, So What? And
it's Million Lives.
86. A Million Lives.
I didn't watch 80. Oh, yeah, I did watch 86. Yeah,
I hope you watched 86. I thought you did, unless my brain is breaking.
I haven't watched anything of it since the beginning of the year, so.
Yeah, that's the sad thing, because I know Tokyo Revenger was one that I was kind of hinting at Chris checking out, because it's kind of like that. I think the whole aspect of Save the Girl would be something that he would probably would find that emotional connection like I did. Like this idea of like, you just want this person to be happy. You want to see that. It's the protect the smiles, the animation, really. But it is one of those things of like, it's hard to recommend to people just because of how distracting the censorship was and how infuriating it is that the censorship is something that shouldn't be censored. It's not a bad symbol. The manji symbol is not a bad symbol. And I apologize to everybody. I wasn't saying Tokyo Manji Revengers, and I said that Otaku Spirit and the Discord and everywhere will be known as Tokyo Manji Revengers, and I think the idea of not saying manji in the middle is that censorship. So I apologize. I'm going to update my outline right now. There. I got it. Technically, the manga is Tokyo Manji Revengers. And again, when they took the manji out for the anime just to add to that, throw salt on it. Anyways, but yeah, I don't think that they, don't get me wrong, these aren't trends. These are essentially just hiccups. These are bad choices that I hope that they realize that those choices were bad. I think for a lot of them, they are obviously no. I think the Promised Neverland, I think they got tons of heat for that. Again, I don't think that's not necessarily Cloverworks problem. They didn't do it. It was the director, the script writer, and they're probably their talks with the actual mangaka. They wanted to finish it in season two. They didn't want to do it season three. And so they probably chose to do that just so they can rush it all out. But at the same time, other things like So Much Better, So What? I'm curious of how bad the backlash was in Japan. I don't know. That's kind of one of those ones where I know it was, its fandom was probably held up by Aoyuki, but I haven't really looked into seeing how they responded to it, but I assume it was probably as equally as negative as it was in the West. But
do we know, on the Million Lives, do you know if, cause I know you said that it definitely felt like somebody else wrote it. I don't,
I don't know. I didn't really think about it too much. I know that we discussed it at some point.
That they decided they were going to release the sides, the branching, basically, the branching story as a light novel, I think it was.
Yeah, if I remember right, Route A, Tokyo Ghoul. That one had a similar issue of somebody or of the
writer. Well, that
the
was
writer,
the original writer that doing
that. The original writer. And that's what I was getting ready to say is, and that one everybody absolutely despised as well. So I'm wondering if this is one of those things of one of the creators said, hey, we have this idea. People will buy both products if they know that these are telling different stories. And he was like, well, okay, this is what I would have done if I had done this route. And basically outlined it all out.
I want to say the main reason is because that the original story would have taken too long. They only had like, what, 6-7 episodes to work with because the previous arc ended in the middle of the season. And then they
got
their next mission.
Do you remember what the mission was?
It was to handle the drug issue in a certain kingdom. And from what I understand, that story is pretty long. It would not. I don't think it would have fit in that amount of time.
Right. I remember you saying the drug thing, and I do seem to remember. What was the
And there's
was
also
the choice
an issue that Japan doesn't like Daido drugs.
What? Oh. What was their choice that they did make?
It was to save the village or something like that. Or fight out. No, it was like to rescue the people or something like that. Because the whole
idea
was that,
it's not necessarily
they have to save the town.
They were in the volcano. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, it's one of those things of...
No, the volcano was the first arc.
Well, they were
the
in a mountain.
The second arc was they were up in some
mountain that they had
peninsula.
To go through a cave to get to. Yeah. It's one of those frustrating things of you never really know what's in the background. And yet at the same time, it's like, I just went ahead and took it for what it is. When Andrew had mentioned it, it was like, yeah, I guess I could see that this didn't feel like it necessarily fit, but it didn't feel that bad. I don't know. I think that when they do this writer does actually do a lot of his writing, he's almost trying really hard to hammerhead in these kind of existential gray area questions. So if they had went the drug route, they probably would have had a whole bunch of that. And in this one, they technically didn't have any of those. At best, they had the secret murderer. I guess I don't know. It's an interesting question on that one.
Yeah. All right, moving on. It would not be the State of Anime 2021 edition with really diving into trends. Now, we technically have talked a little bit about certain trends that we're seeing throughout this entire episode so far, but really diving into the specifics, I think, is important. And obviously, one of the bigger ones, I think there's two really big ones that have to be mentioned, but one of the, I think, of course, the biggest one is the continued trend of how many, the plethora of shows we're getting every single season. And again, it's something that we've talked to. I love referencing this episode all the time, but as the Anime Dying podcast episode, we talked about this idea that despite the fact that people think that there's bad shows, it's really more of a case of there's just a lot more shows, and they, of course, there's gonna be shows that you don't like. But yes, the scene that we're still in that area of roughly 40 plus shows per season is both terrifying to people that cover it and people that want to watch everything but can't, but also I think a positive because there's such a diverse amount of shows that you can really look at, it really covering a spectrum of people's tastes and what they're looking for. And yes, it does mean certain shows are there more, certain genres are more of, but I think overall it's a win. Obviously the big concern that comes of it is when you do have certain studios are taking on too many shows, cough, cough, Cloverworks, but also the case of many that are really struggling to, I guess, get their shows out there. I think there is something to be said. There's a negative in the lack of attention to certain shows because there's so much, which is technically what we do. Trying to cover as many shows as possible so people can find those gems that otherwise wouldn't be noticed. A good example being A Sentence of Bookworm. as soon as the Bookworm began a season that had a lot of other shows that were obviously more important to the overall public, the big shonens and stuff, it was that little nugget that was kind of hidden in the background that the studio did a great job with, but unfortunately gets lost in the, I'm going to use this word again, the oversaturation. Are we seeing there's a question to be had. Is there an oversaturation because of that? Obviously, it's not quite there yet because they're still doing it. If there's an oversaturation, you would probably see the shows come back down because they realize that they're not making money. But it's a concern, I think, in the end.
In some respects, it's concerning. In other respects, I wonder how much of it is... How do I put this? Because it's going to sound kind of counterintuitive. With the pandemic, you wonder, because effectively animated shows, what they do is they...
Social distance,
that's what it was. In some respects, animation, yes, it does require some face-to-facing, but in a lot of cases, they could animate from home. And that was one of the interesting things about it. If you think about it, acting, you have to be in front of each other and you are technically having to have your mask off to act out a scene. So in some respects, animation was the natural change in the industry. Now, is it going to stick? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if this trend does keep on expanding and we get to 60 and 70 shows. I seriously doubt it, but 40 was where it was kind of the, it's a little bit higher than what it was before. I think we were at 30 shows per season and 40 yeah. seems a little bit more, huh?
Yeah, it was like 30. And I think that was a little bit of like a hiccup for like one season with delays with the whole pandemic. But I think it was like, it felt like it was going to be a whole bunch of shows, and it ended up being like maybe two shows that actually ended up delaying one season. It didn't seem like it affected as much as we were kind of expecting. At the time, we were getting a lot of news of like, is this one delayed? Is this one delayed? Is this one delayed? And it didn't really turn out to be that bad in the end.
And yeah, and that's the thing is when the thing about these shows...
Consider they already wear masks before in Japan for the most part.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting at their desk drawing. It's like, it doesn't seem like it's that... as impactful as, yeah, maybe a bunch of people having to sit in a room and talking to each other about a situation. Yeah, the director and stuff involving with that kind of stuff, but it didn't end up being as big of an impact as we originally thought. Because obviously, the big issue that we were seeing was, well, do they even have the technology, the servers, the networking needed for people to work remotely? Do they need to? Is it like a Shirabako situation, just put an envelope and somebody comes and picks it up and then they go back to what they were doing kind of situation? But...
Yeah, and it's what I mean is the fact of there's going to be time slots that are needing to be filled. They would either go with an old show and rerun it or do this, and that's more what I was pointing out. True. Is the interesting aspect of
you mean Japanese television industry in general?
Yeah. So is that something that happened? I don't know. I can't see behind the scenes. I'm just speculating, and I thought it was kind of a fun thought. But when it comes down to it, I do think that it is interesting to see that there is an increase in this last year or so. And I definitely feel it. I'm trying to keep up, and I'm having to let things go or letting some shows go in hopes of keeping up with my other hobby. But when it comes down to it, it is interesting to see.
His other hobby, waifu game, no.
Right?
But yeah, like I kind of alluded to earlier, obviously the other trend that comes with that increase of how many shows per season is you gotta usually typically you'll have trends in what type of shows we're seeing, and it doesn't seem like the old isekai trend is going anywhere anytime soon, as we did see. Especially in summer of 2021, a huge bump in how many isekais we had. But for the most part, across the year itself, we had about six shows per season for isekais. And again, technically that summer of 2021, we've seen 12 isekai shows. And that's technically, you know, including some titles like, you know, technically Irma Makun, Welcome to Demon School, Irma Makun is a sort of isekai. Yeah, the reverse isekai is happening as well, but... Yeah, that's a lot of isekais, which was really fun because it was interesting to see. Not only was there a lot of good isekais in our opinion, I mean, things like, you know, as much as people don't want to give any credit to any isekai, we had shows like Tsukimichi Moonlit Fantasy that came out that were just these nuggets of shows that were doing their own thing and doing interesting things along with it. Plus, obviously, the big one, Mushoku Tensei, one of the, many claimed as being like the grandfather of isekai. I know it's not the first, but it was something that was a trendsetter at the time. And a lot of shows that we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years were technically taking a lot of ideas from Mushoku Tensei. And to finally get the one that kind of created those trends to finally have an adaptation and have an adaptation that was done by a studio specifically built for it was pretty incredible. And it of course, is with the mindset of the director themselves saying, shoot, there's a lot of isekai. Do we really want to do this? But it was still incredible to see not just isekai trends pumping up, but also one of the most beloved franchises coming out. So it's a big year for isekai, that's for sure. Enough that I ended up creating my own little isekai digest video series that year. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the way I wanted to put it, it was I'm hoping, and in other respects I'm dreading the idea of this being the peak of isekais, because I do love isekai. But at the same time, I've also voiced my concern that I hope that we're not getting to the bottom of the trough on this, where we're sitting here looking at all of the quote unquote best isekais. And because we're not only are we getting a lot of isekais, we're getting a lot of really fantastic isekais. And at some point you're going to run out of material. And I just hope that that's not what we're doing. We're just getting some of the good ones. And when this trend does kind of go back down into its dip, we still have one that's going to be a gem that we can enjoy here and there. And as we go into other trends, because there's going to be other trends that we'll start to pick up here soon, to take the place of the isekai. We've talked about this before, where we had a whole bunch of school anime. We had a whole bunch of,
Club Mecha, Magic School.
Yeah, and this is the one that's going on right now, and eventually it will go out and will be replaced with something else.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think that's the trouble, that when we cover anime is specifically trying to, I guess, it's hard to talk about isekais when you know that there is a exhaustion of it. There is a large group of people that just, like, the moment you see guy goes to other world, it's like shut down. And to cover a lot of this stuff and really get people to pay attention to certain ones. I mean, again, Mushoku Tensei and even things like Tsukimichi and Saint Magic Power. It's like these little isekais. Send us a bookworm. I keep chiming on. Season coming up here soon is going to have the sequel in spring. So it's like, don't worry. It's almost like a lot of strength that we have to exert every single year to go, I know you're tired of them, but don't forget this one. I know you're tired of this genre, but that doesn't mean they don't have something to offer. And to really kind of express that difference there has always been a challenge. So yeah. I think the other big interesting trend that we've seen last year, and it's an exciting trend for me, and obviously exciting trend for people that want to, I guess, cover anime, and those that hate source material spoilers, is originals. 2021, we've seen a huge, huge surge in originals, and I'm super excited about that. In winter specifically, we had Wonder Egg Priority, Skate, and 7 other ones. In spring was pretty dang insane. We had Vivi, Fluorite, Ice Song. We had Odd Taxi. We had Link Click, which I haven't watched yet, but I've heard a lot of good things about it, as well as 8 other ones there. In summer, we had Sunny Boy, Aquatope and White Sand, Fina Pirate Princess, Remain, and about 3 other ones. And then we also had like 12 shorts, mostly shorts, in fall. So just a lot of originals. And like I said before, that's an exciting thing for me, because we get to go into it completely blind. The fandom as a whole gets to go into it completely blind. There's no worries about source material. You don't have to worry about people spoiling things. Everybody can kind of speculate at the same time. There was nothing, focusing mostly on Odd Taxi for me personally, it's like that was such a fun show to watch on a weekly basis. Like the discussions that we were getting into on what the hell was, I think if you mix both original and, you know, suspense mystery type stuff, it's just asking for the community as a whole to come together and go, what is happening? What do you think's happening? And yeah, like especially the big twist in the whole show, a lot of people speculating on trying to figure that out. Was so much fun. And again, you didn't have to worry about spoilers. And that's so great. I mean, getting into other shows, I mean, a good example is Ranking Kings. And that show came out, it didn't take within the first two episodes of me doing impressions. We already had people in the comments going, no, this is what's going on. It's like, well, do we really have to do that? Like, do we need to do this? What do you get from this? To spoil it for everybody, we don't care. You're not the big genius that has the knowledge that needs to impair it upon us. You're not special because you read the source material. Let us enjoy the show. I mean, and granted, that's a rare case. It's not always. And I think that's mainly because we've kind of garnered a community that's respectful about things like that. I'm sure it's terrible for people that have a lot more certain fans following them. But I mean, with Muv Luv, that's been around for a while. And yet people watching me do my impressions video on Muv Luv Alternative, it was like, you're actually going to watch this and you haven't read this or you haven't read the visual novel? I'm like, no, I'm just doing my impressions on it. And they're like, some of the people were like surprised how much I was actually gathering because they felt like it was cutting too much stuff out. It was a really fun thing to have all these people that obviously know there's like a huge and very passionate fan base for Muv Luv. And to have their feedback and not spoil the thing for me was like hugely surprising. I think they're... You can get it. You can tap into certain groups that just know that it's wrong to tell the people about it. They want to see other people get into it. They don't want to spoil it. But there's like subsects of like just random manga and stuff like that, that when it gets adaptation, everybody's like, oh, here's my turn. This is my chance to be the guy that has the knowledge. It's like, nobody cares. Please just shut up.
It's one of those.
And originals fix that, basically.
I wish that people would realize that it should be more fun to see something, enjoy something that you already enjoy, mm-hmm. rather than, because that was one thing that it was so hard not to accidentally spoil stuff of Game of Thrones with Andrew, and yet I had more fun.
Totally did too.
I think I did.
He did
I
don't one remember. Really big one,
and it was
like out of nowhere. Like, okay, I guess that character's going. He's like, oh wait, that didn't happen yet, because we were in the middle of seasons, and he thought that something happened in the show that didn't happen yet. It was a really big scene, and I was like, okay, cool, thanks.
it's one of those things of watching Andrew enjoy it was very very enjoyable for me in having him.
We were watching the show together, and the entire time, the corner of my eye, he's just staring at me.
Wasn't that bad. Come on now.
It's like the whole thing where the people are on the bed and the dog just peeking over the side of the bed, just staring.
Is it going to happen
yet? What's his reaction?
There is a lot of things that is enjoyable to see somebody else enjoying something that you love. And I wish that people would respect that more and find that enjoyment of just fostering that... But it is a hard thing to do. I do understand that. I mean, like Andrew had said, that I believe I know which scene that I accidentally messed up, and it's one of those things that it crushed me because I wanted him to experience that what I experienced with that, and it was a pretty big scene, and it
sucked. Statement was,
I think it was, I won't say the name.
The statement was, do you think they're really dead? It's like. And again, I'm being vague there still, but it was like, yeah, again, what? Okay. Okay. So that just tells me two things technically. It tells me two things technically. Anyways, yeah. The other trend that I think is really cool is an increase of slice of life. And the reason why I say this is it really seemed like we were at a drought with slice of life. And I know this is one of those really interesting things is that realization at some point that there is a subsect of people in the anime fandom that just eat up slice of life. And again, going back to what we were talking about before, there's groups that are just, they go after the biggest long running shonens. That's all they really watch. Everything else doesn't really matter. They have their One Piece, their Dragon Ball, everything else What is Crunchyroll showing me? Just have a front page where all it does is I click the latest shonen. I don't care about this other stuff. But there's different subsects, of course. Like, there's the people that, yeah, they love their cute girls and cute things. There's the people that love their, you know, crazy mecha stuff. And then there's, like, this weird... Again, I don't think I really ever noticed it until probably, I don't know, early last year. There's a group of people that they just want slice of life. Like, that's all they care about. When's the next big slice of life? And it really did feel like, if you think about it, prior to 2021, it seemed like there was a drought. You didn't really see those types of shows. Yeah, there was probably one in a year or something like that. But last year, we had a ton. We had Aquatope and White Sand, which if you want slice of life, that's pure slice of life. Blue Period, again, a very slice of life, pure slice of life. Nanambiori, technically, has its fandom. It's more cute girls in cute things, slice of life comedy. Horimiya, that's more in the romance area, which we'll get into as well. Fruits Baskets, another very slice of life type story, even though it has a little bit of a supernatural in there. Super Cub, God, I love it. I love it so much. Remake Our Life has a little bit of a twist in there, but it's mostly just slice of life, living and getting into some sort of passion. Senpai is Annoying was surprisingly slice of life. I wasn't even expecting. I figured it was going to be a skit comedy. And then Taisho Tomie Fairy Tale is a period piece slice of life. I think it was just a really fantastic year for those people, and including myself. I love a really good solid slice of life that you don't need action. You don't need melodrama. You don't need comedy to really kind of mix it up. It's just, I want to see this person's life. I want to see where they go. And that it was great to have at least some existence of that. Again, in the plethora of 40 plus shows a season, it's good to have people give me a little bit of a nugget of something slice of life in there.
It is a very difficult balance of a show, and that no matter how you look at it,
and it doesn't surprise me that slice of lives aren't popular. It's a slice of life, and it can be boring at times. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to balance that. Again, they usually put comedy or melodrama in there to keep your interest, but just to see just, again, a life.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was getting ready to say, is that it's so hard to balance that, keeping an interest of the viewer, and at the same time keep that feel of just, this is somebody's life. Because if you stop and think about it, your life is pretty much boring. That's kind of the reason why you want to go and be entertained by something else.
Yeah, and like I kind of alluded to earlier, we did see some return of some solid romance titles into the world. We had, obviously, Banished from the Hero's Party, which I think was probably, would you say, probably the most popular romance last year? It was Horimiya, come on. And you could probably say, for a lot of people, obviously, Fruits Basket was a huge romance title to kind of, again, come to a conclusion. But there was a lot more to Fruits Basket than just the romance, honestly, let's be honest. But I think for pure romance, Taisho Tomie Fairy Tale and Horimiya were really solid. And again, I'm a person that I believe that anime just doesn't do romance. Like, I've never liked romance in anime. There's very few titles that I will tell people to go watch when I think romance. I mean, here recently, I was introduced to Emma. That was a really solid romance for me. And again, going back to last year, things like Taisho Tomie Fairy Tale and Horimiya were like these breath of fresh air to have in an anime. And yes, I joked about Banished from the Hero's Party, but to have stories where it feels like they're full relationships. It's not just, you know, will they, won't they, oh, doki doki. We had kisses in a lot of anime last year.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, surprising. And just in the first season of this year, it's like, oh
and then, yeah. Yeah, and it's more comedy as well, but we also have Bok-chan, Duke of Death and his maid. So
yeah,
it was a good year for Doki Dokis.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing. Again, I think there is a subsect of people that are just looking for those romances, and I want everybody to have what they want.
Yeah,
we love that. We love when people's that's why we are so acceptant of the idea of dubs. We can probably be on here all the time and say, lol, apparently they're dubbing this show. What a waste of money. No, I want the dub there. Because I know that probably eventually I'll get old enough to the point where people see me on YouTube. They know I wear glasses. They're not for show. I'm not trying to go for the Moe look.
No, you're going for the if you watch him half the time, he does the push thing. So
you gotta use the middle finger, though.
We know that he's actually going for the
Chris just doesn't know that I'm just doing it to flip him off because I always use the middle finger. But
no, that's true.
You gotta always use the middle finger. But no, eventually I'm gonna get to that point where I'm not able to read subtitles. I don't doubt it. I mean, even if I get to like 80 or something like that, eventually I'm not going to be able to watch the subtitles. And so I want the dub to exist. I want the dub industry to exist. And yes, technically a lot for people that may have vision impaired or something like that, it's hard for them to read, or some people are dyslexic. And so it's difficult to read it. There's different impairments. Plus some people just, they're fine with the dub, and I want them to have that. And that's the same with all these other things. I want there to be slice of life for people that love slice of life. We want everybody to have their fill of anime every year, or every season as well, too. So it's good to see these trends kind of move up. So
I wish people would stop putting us in the sub-purist area. I love dubs. I want them to exist. I wish the company would change the way they're doing things, but that has nothing to do with whether or not I think dubs should exist.
Yeah, if you're upset about animation, you can go in with the pay for dubbers too, and how they basically just use like an assembly line of people going through there. But that's another topic. Of course, this is an exciting trend that I've seen in last year. And it kind of seen a little bit in winter this season already as well. Obviously, a lot of shows aren't done yet, so we're not seeing it completely. But seeing sequel announcements. The thing that I think as big anime fans, especially for us, covering a lot of shows, what is the big discussion that we have at the end of each season with every single show? Is it a source material bait?
Yep.
Is this something that you will enjoy? Or when we're trying to give people the context, when we're talking about reviewing a show, we want to give people the context. Are you going to feel complete at the end? Or are you going to feel like, but then what? And some shows do that. Some shows have that feeling of, where's the next episode? Oh, wait, that was it? And I think to have that feeling that sometimes before the show ends, in a lot of cases, we'll actually hear about it before streaming services broadcast last episode, because technically it broadcasts in Japan, and at the end of the episode, they say they're going to have a sequel. So we'll find out like before we even get the last episode. But to have those end of season or end of series announcements is so good. Like, I love that when I watch a show, I don't have to go, will this ever get something else, or was this just literally an advertisement for the source material? And then literally at the end of the episode of the thing, it says, see you next season, and next season in works. That kind of announcement is, I love it. I love it so much.
I absolutely despise the idea that we have to say this felt like a chapter end, and that's a good thing. I despise that. It's one of those, the biggest frustrations in should I watch this or should I not watch this? And we go through the entire review. We're super hype on it. And the last episode took a dump on the entire show. And I hate it because XXXXX.
The destination.
Yeah. And it's so, I mean, one of them in your list, while, yeah, it's great that it has, but if it had dumped it off on where they had left it, I think we were a little upset because it was a little bit Spirit Chronicles. That was one of the ones that they
dumped
didn't
on
announce.
It. My video, I dumped on it, and we didn't hear about a sequel for, I think, late into the next season. So it was worth, I mean, it was at the time justly, because there was two aspects to it. Spirit Chronicles both had the manga bait aspect. For those that don't know what the source material bait aspect of a ending of a series, it's when you have like at the very last like 5 to 10 minutes of the episode, of the last episode, it feels like it's trying to cram in a bunch of characters you have not seen before, and it feels like the pacing, suddenly somebody pressed the fast forward button and they're trying to cover as much possible and show as many things as possible and show a bunch of what ifs what's around the corner. You see you next time in the source material, kind of filling stuff. I mean, we joked about before when we were talking about, was it Mayo? That the dragon, the demon and hero story. That one, the very end of the last episode, suddenly you're seeing a council of people and they're talking about doing something terrible. And it's like, wait, what? And then it's ended. And it's like, wait, what? That's a source material. It's trying to show you it's not over yet. And justly so. These are advertisements. They should be able to say, there's more here. We want to show you. So I don't blame them too much, but it makes the value of the anime adaptation less. Like, it's something I don't even want to put on my shelf because it's not done. And Spirit Chronicles did that. And the worst thing about it, and I heard from a lot of people that read the source material, they literally they move things around just so they can put that there. And so it made it feel malicious. They moved arcs to make that happen. And so it almost felt like it was maliciously done just to tease what was going forward. And there's an argument to be made. Maybe they did that on purpose. They announced the second season because of there being some backlash. But at the time, it was justified that we hated it because it felt like it was a textbook case of source material bait. Anyways, sorry. I cut you off and you probably forgot your train of thought.
You did fine. You were fine.
But no, this is a good thing again. And I think Fireway Paladin is probably the best example in this list of being a good thing to exist. Being a good thing that they announce it so quickly. Because at least with Fireway Paladin, it's such a slow burn show. That us, if I didn't know, because we found out about that, I think, towards the 10th episode. I don't think it was at the end of it. No, it was announced at the last episode, too. It was one of those shows where it's like, I wanted this needs to have multiple seasons. Like,
yeah.
Otherwise, I cannot suggest it because it's such a slow burn. It's like you're literally in the beginning points of it. Technically, Spirit Chronicles was, too. You know, it's building the character right now. It's building the world. And then the later seasons can get into, okay, now let's go on an adventure. And I felt like not having an announcement for a sequel was going to make it very difficult for me to suggest to people.
I could.
So then when you had that announcement, it was like, yes, I can suggest this now. It's more favored to us than anybody else, honestly.
I couldn't imagine them turning around and like just cutting off dead in the middle of one of their arcs. Faraway Paladin, it being given so much time to breathe. I mean, another thing that some of the source material baits will do is literally the cliffhanger dead in the middle of something going on. And that is absolutely one of the things that I despise. Take your favorite 24 episode show, whatever it is, and imagine them just chopping it off dead in the middle of the 12th episode. And then you'll have one.
Think of 86 right now.
Yeah, 86 is doing that.
It's like we don't even know what happened to the characters. We have to wait until the next season before it comes out.
It's one of those things that we've had it happen several times.
Noah Zero.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you kind of just learn to deal with it. it's funny to have somebody pop up and ask a question on is this a trend that no, it's always been there. It's always been there. It's been happening for 20 some odd years. I remember always hating one of the adaptations of the original Tenchimoyo was them going off into space and then you know nothing of what's going on or something like that. And and I always hated that they never explored that part of Tenchimoyo. So to give you an idea, that's how long it's been happening. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Claymore, the original Fruits Basket. I mean, it's something that's been around for a long time, unfortunately. I mean, the original Berserk adaptation, come on.
Yeah.
The original Berserk adaptation, come on. You can't get any worse than that.
Yeah.
That was terrible. Ugh, that was terrible. But yeah, it's great. Just to name off a few, of course, the fact that we know that and again, there's a good example. Knowing that Mushoku Tensei is getting they've announced their plans is to do a full adaptation. Something can happen, and that could not happen. I hope not, but that makes it so much easier to say. If we didn't have that knowledge, and we only got the first part, the first core, Yeah. It'd be a lot more difficult to suggest, especially on the idea that there's so much controversy around the character. But knowing it has a full story and there's a redemption that's the character is going to evolve. The character will change. There's a dynamic character here, and we will actually get to experience it. It makes it so much easier to suggest.
But, yeah, that was a massive cliffhanger ending.
Yeah, sort of, because the. If you're talking about the turning point, that can't happen just before the ending of it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. Anyways, yeah, To Your Eternity was obviously very successful. Knowing there's not another odd taxi movie coming up here, so it will hopefully give us the answer that we need. Shadow House getting a sequel. Again, Tsukimichi Moonlit Fan, that I mentioned earlier, is great as well. Death, Duke of Death, I was actually surprised to hear that was getting another season. But at the same time, knowing it's that certain group of JC staff that does their kind of CGI animation could be a trend within that certain group, because technically with High Score Girl, they did a full adaptation of that story. They could do a full adaptation of Duke of Death as well, which I think is extremely exciting. There's other ones like that I'm not too excited about, but I'm happy for the fans of it, like Vampire Dies in No Time. I love hearing that Muvlo Alternative is getting a sequel as well, which I'm fully invested in. Miss Togatoro, of course, but yeah, I'm still waiting for Kageki Shoujo and Saint Magic Power Omnipotent, but we can't always get what we want. I was even thinking Taisho Tomi Fairy Tale, but I've heard that's pretty much kind of reworked things just to kind of make one season, which I'm fine with. But yeah, some things to look forward to going forward. So we've kind of delved into what happened in 2021 and a little bit before then and all the trends we're seeing, but what to look forward to going into 2022 and onward. Of course, the biggest exciting thing was that we heard that Rurouni Kenshin and Bleach is coming back, which I think is insane. I don't know that we've gotten a confirmation on what Rurouni Kenshin will be, if it's going to be a readaptation or if they got something else to do is a big question mark. But obviously with Bleach, we have the upcoming arc for, then they say it was a final arc, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I went back and looked into where we had left off, and I guess I was extending arcs in my head or something, but yeah, it's going into pretty much the last arc. Now, it's not a small arc, don't get me wrong, but yeah, it's a very, very long arc.
Yeah, is it the Thousand Year War or something like that?
Yeah, it's the where they start getting into the Spirit King and all that stuff, so yeah. I don't want to spoil the other faction.
Yeah, that's exciting. Now, I put in my notes when I did my video for this that now we just need Spice and Wolf. I'm not saying that we have a Spice and Wolf confirmation yet. I'm just saying here in a couple days, there's a 25th anniversary happening. And like I've said before, the key art for that particular announcement looks very in the middle ground between anime and light novel artwork. It's definitely not their light novel artwork that they usually use, so it could just be the artists themselves change the style a little bit, but I don't know. I'm not going to hold my breath. I'm not going to get excited. I don't want to be let down, but it's hard not to get a little excited that hopefully that will be a thing. But yeah, some other things to kind of keep in mind. We've kind of already mentioned the idea that we're going to have an increased amount of subs. But some series to look forward to. I mean, gosh, go look up any chart and look at Spring. Spring scares the hell out of me as a content creator because I want to cover it all and there's too much coming up. But yeah, Sentence of Bookworm coming back is super exciting. Shield Hero, obviously. Vinland Saga is possibly coming back here soon. Everybody's been talking about Chainsaw Man for the longest time. Overlord coming back for another season, which that one's been on hiatus for quite a while for anime-wise. Maiden Abyss coming back I can't wait for Maiden Abyss to come back. Kaguya-sama of the Love is War is coming back as well, of course. What other ones have we have announced here recently that's coming back? Oh yeah, Devil's a Part-Timer. I need to watch the first season of that, of course, but I'm excited for fans of Devil's Part-Timer. That's coming back.
I almost feel like I want to rewatch that just to refresh on it. It's one of those that I watched it so long ago. I almost would feel like it's an injustice to watch it and go, I don't remember what happened there. Oh yeah, that happened. Ah, gotcha.
Demon Lord Next Door, or Demon Girl Next Door. That one's, oh
yeah.
Gosh,
I can't wait for her to come back.
She's so cute. I just hope they have the same. I think they announced that there was like I think it's a different studio, but my hope is it's the same staff, because it was just like the quirks that they put in that show and sold it. Like the yeah. goofy little sound effects and stuff in the background with the text and everything, just it sold the cuteness and the comedy of that so well. I hope they pull it off. It was such a good show. But yeah,
I am happy that Kaguya-sama is coming back. That I already want to see. I almost feel like I hate saying this because I just love it in general, but I almost kind of want to see more of that just to get a completion to that romance.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
It just keeps going. It seems like it's ramping up. We'll see. I do think that there's something to be said about getting those kinds of conclusion. What I guess we could look forward to. Shoot, what was her name? My senpai is not senpai is annoying. The opai girl, the teasing girl one, because they didn't. Zaki-chan. They announced the second season, didn't they? I don't think we've got a confirmation on when that's coming out. So. I guess we have that to look forward to if it ends up being this year. I would assume so, because otherwise, if they go out to 2023, that's going to be quite a gap. Not that it matters, but that'll be fun seeing that comeback. I had struggles early on, but I really did enjoy that series. I would love to see it come back.
Did you say Labyrinthium was coming?
They announced it for 2022.
No, so they didn't say a season?
Right.
So at least I'll get it before fall. Or by fall.
Unless it delays. I don't know. They're usually pretty good about whenever they at least land a year, they'll have it within that year. It doesn't seem like Japan really takes announcements of dates for actual adaptations and stuff lightly. And I think that's probably because I think some of them probably lock in a year and a time slot, and they just kind of breadcrumb it out like, oh yeah, let's give them the year first. Okay, now let's tell them where the season is. Because they know. I mean, these TV studios and stuff, they're planning ahead several seasons, what they're going to put in each time bracket, because people are trying to buy slots. You need to know where they're going to put it. So, and yes, there's times where that could be delayed, but I think they're typically really good about it. I can't even think off the top of my head a case where a show is like, yeah, we're coming in spring, and then it doesn't happen. I mean, yes, we did have the pandemic kind of mess with a couple shows, but that's a kind of a interesting situation there. It's kind of hard to say that's the fault of anybody. But yeah, it'll be interesting. We have definitely an exciting year. I think our preview for spring alone is going to be, I joked about it online and stuff. Like, I think we might need to do a two-parter for a preview, because it's one thing to say we have a preview where we talk about a bunch of shows, but it's something different when I see that typically, you'll have like, yeah, 10 or 15 shows where me and Chris will be like, we want to talk about how we're excited about it or something interesting about it. But this is one case where it's like, seemingly it feels like 30 shows in that list is going to be like, we're going to be hyping about it. We're going to be talking about what we're hyped about it for. And so it might be a little bit longer episode than usual, but that's for another 2 weeks away, maybe three. God, it's coming already. It's just season's coming already.
Yep, pretty much.
I guess it was nice to have a decently quiet season. I mean, it's bad for me because I want content to kind of keep pushing out. But yeah, next season's going to be crazy. And that even goes for even – I looked at a little bit into summer as well. There's a couple titles in there that I'm actually excited about. I mean, think technically Devil's Part-Timers in summer as well. And there's a couple other ones that are kind of mixed in there that I'm excited for. Fall is going to be insane probably because – despite the fact that I went along with the hype and people cross-sourcing each other that Chainsaw Man was coming out in fall, I still believe it's coming in fall. We know Chainsaw Man's coming in 2022. I think that was confirmed. And I think that they would probably announce it by now if it's going to be a spring or summer. It's got to be fall. But we'll see. But even still then, you have Bleach coming out in fall. We still technically have the Urusei Yatsura remake is coming in 2022, so that might be somewhere in fall or summer or fall. It's just this year's gonna be crazy.
Most of the spring shows will probably have already been announced by now, right? Well, I guess a lot of them.
We did have another announcement last week, which was that Daimon. I know I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Daimon. That one was kind of confirmed for coming in spring, and that was a late announcement there. That Unless sucks. They were announcing the date itself. I think they were announcing that was spring. Why does that suck?
Because my show didn't get announced.
Oh. What show?
Labyrinth.
Oh, yeah. Again, it's 2022. We'll find out. We'll find out in due time. Anyways.
That just means, no, I mean more along the lines of at least one more season, I'm going to be waiting for it.
True.
I've been waiting for it for like 3 years now, so that's one more season.
Need High Dive to pick it up?
Somebody pick it up, please.
We'll have.
I don't even think they've announced a studio for it.
No, like I said, it's literally just them because we it was speculated first, or there was leaks or something. I forget what it was, and then it was like the cover had a wrap that said 2022. That's all we know. So anything else additional to that is a big unknown at this point, but. Yeah, that's it. That's the State of Anime 2021 edition. Similar that I left my video that I did on this particular thing, I do want to mention the fact that we have to thank 2021 for the most important thing. It's not Mushoku Tensei. It's not...
I don't know. That's pretty big.
Anything else. It's that we got Super Cub.
That's pretty huge, too.
2021 brought us Super Cub. Thank you, 2021, for bringing us Super Cub. Because I think the smiles in that show bless us all. The entire year. So,
if nobody else supports those girls, I do.
I'm so glad that Akebi's doing as well as it is. Kind of in because that was the whole thing that was connecting. Because obviously, Akebi, the mangaka for Akebi-chan's Sailor Uniform, is the artist for the light novel of Super Cub. And so, obviously, when this came up, I'm like, I know it's not going to be the same writer, but at least I know they've interacted. So maybe there might be a similarity there, and. It does have a little bit of feel of Super Cub, definitely doing its own thing, but I'm just happy to see that it's doing so well. And I think probably a lot that has to do with the fact that it's with CloverWorks, and CloverWorks getting a lot of attention right now with things like, you know, obviously Dress Up Darling, but it's doing so well, and I'm happy. I'm happy there's a discussion around it. My videos on it are doing well, which tells me that there's a group of passionate people for Akebi. So, again, it taps into the slice of life fandom that I was mentioning earlier, and I think that's a good bit of why I'm realizing there is a strong, passionate fandom of Slice of Life, and I think, thankfully, I've tapped into that, at least on YouTube, so we can kind of, you know, enjoy that kind of stuff together, rather than it be a thing where you feel like you're alone when you love things like Slice of Life. It always feels like you're alone with those things. It doesn't feel like you're within a large, loud group of people excited about something when it's anything but a shonen.
You're right.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I kind of sometimes wish we get that passion that you see in those fandoms. Though, again, what comes with that is sometimes the worst of it.
Well, you stop and think about it. You want passion and hype for a show that's not hyped.
Right. Then it's no longer you need a passion for it.
But I love the group that loves the slice of life because there is just a charm to it that I will always be drawn to that.
Well, it's the thing. Like whenever I'm watching Akebi, my video isn't me. There's some speculation that I've kind of built in my own head with a lot of the characters in there, and it's like, I just want to talk about how wholesome it is. And I don't know that anybody cares to hear me talk about this was so adorable. Does anybody agree? And yeah, sure enough, everyone's like, yeah, it's adorable. I'm like, yeah, thank you. We're talking about how adorable and wholesome and goofy this is. Like, this recent episode, having her mimic her class president, I was like, oh, that was so perfect. It was so perfect. Let's talk about it. I don't know what we're going to talk about. It's just so, it's wholesome. We love it. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. So, anyway. That's the State of Anime. I'm glad that we can get you all updated on how trends and everything are moving. But it's been a lot of fun. Last year was exciting. And I'm super excited for this next year. Again, spring scares me. Shield Hero coming back. Did I mention that? Yeah, we did. It's scaring me. But yeah, hope you guys enjoy this episode. As always, if you guys want to support us, we have many ways you can do that. You can tell other people about us. Word of mouth is something that we very much so appreciate. There's nothing better than that. Also, monetarily, you can support us through Patreon or through our tips link on our description for our in our description of our YouTube videos. I don't have a link up currently updated on the new website, but I'll get it up there eventually. But if you need a link, I can you can just talk to me. We're on social media, Otaku Spirit at Otaku Spirited. We're on Discord. Again, you can find links on Twitter and on this particular description of this channel. We definitely appreciate everybody that supports us. It means a whole lot to us. Again, thank you everybody that support us to get to 5,000 subs on YouTube. Hoping to see that grow more and more as we go along. But as always, we hope you all enjoyed, and y'all take care.
Os!
Again.